Back in on Canuck Central, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Hour number two of the program as we continue here, and hour number two on Canuck Central is brought to you by BC Liquor. Until June 28th, explore their exceptional selection and save like $2 off Tanqueray London Dry Gin. Visit your nearest BC Liquor today. Enjoy responsibly. It is a Thursday, but we're moving Mailbag Friday to Mailbag Thursday because tomorrow is just wall-to-wall draft coverage. We don't have time for anything else. We don't have time for any mailbags. We'll take your live questions on the air, of course. But Mailbag Friday has been moved to Mailbag Thursday because tomorrow is wall-to-wall draft coverage. So hit the music. It's Mailbag Thursday time on Canuck Central. We've got lots of texts coming in. We'll try to get to as many questions as we can before we get to Landon Ferraro a little bit later on this hour. Got producers Eddie Gregory and Zach Clark behind the glass. What questions do the people have for us today?
First off, I thought it was the Thursday afternoon just before Friday draft Thursday mailbag. If you know where I'm going, you know where I'm going with this.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, hey, like, again, we can't do a mailbag tomorrow, so we have to do it today.
Yeah. Yes. Props to my guy, Bill Burr. Anyway.
Bill Burr is the best.
He is. I love Bill Burr. This from Blue Line Bar Down. Does fan overreaction to the Kane acquisition deter other players from wanting to be in our market? It can't come across as very welcoming.
Well, it's funny because I see fans say that, and then the same fans will be like crapping all over Pettersson consistently. So it's like, I'm sorry, you don't think that shows, like, you know what I mean? So to some, perhaps.
Yeah.
But that's the market. And I think for those that pose questions like that, have you yourself tried to drive a player out of town? Whether you feel like it's justified or not. So you contribute to yourself. So it's so again, if you're a fan who's online and has opinions, you know, it cuts both ways, right? Do I think what gets said on Twitter? I honestly don't.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more about just everything together. It's not just the one thing. You know, I know people like to point to it's the fans, it's Twitter, it's media, it's this, it's that. It's not just the one thing. It's just the overall pressure of being in a Canadian market versus being somewhere else. And also, do you have a chance to win or not?
Mm-hmm. Kane, he's from Vancouver. He had to know that there was going to be some question marks at his acquisition. And this fan base holds players to account as much as any other in the league, if not more than any other in the league. And he's got a well-documented past, which we've talked about a lot over the last 24 hours. He would have had to expect that the media, as an extension of the fan base, would ask him those questions today, and that the fans, some, maybe a majority, would not exactly welcome a hometown boy coming back, given what's happened through his career. So, I mean, it's understandable, given the context of Evander Kane. I mean, any fan base in the league would have questions about acquiring this player.
Yeah, and the other thing about it all is, too, it comes down to how well he plays. And I know there are a lot of fans, and again, we spoke about it yesterday. We don't need to go through it again. If you missed the podcast, check it out. We went in-depth about Kane's past, mm-hmm. what it means, the good things, the bad things, all those. We broke it down extensively. And it's fair for you to not like it and not be happy with it.
Yeah.
And it's okay for you to like the move because you think the hockey player is good, and it's okay for you to be like, I want to see what happens in Vancouver. He was, by all reports, on his best behavior generally in Edmonton. Maybe that continues here. I'm okay with giving somebody a chance to show you who they are, like we mentioned yesterday. And that's how I view it. And the other thing is, if Evander Kane plays well, this team has success, guess who's going to be a huge fan favorite? So does that then become a selling point mm-hmm. that a guy who came in with some question marks became a massive fan favorite by the end? Because you know, if he scores goals and fights a couple of guys and this team is good,
fans will embrace him.
And don't you think they asked the exact same questions 2 or 3 years ago in Edmonton when they acquired
him? Yeah, same thing happened. And you guys remember JT Miller when he signed the big contract and the bad year he had?
Yeah.
Everyone hated him. And then what, 6 months later, they're chanting his name in the arena?
Yes.
Yeah. It changes pretty quickly, you know. And you know, every market's got their own things. I saw on Twitter this week, Edmonton media going to bat, being like, you think Connor McDavid would ever want to be in Toronto? They're like, quote tweeting McDavid getting like snapshot shopping at some fancy store in at the mall in Toronto, and it's just like, you think this never happens in Edmonton. You think McDavid wants this if he were to move to Toronto next year as a free agent? And it's just like, yeah, every player's got their own preferences, you know? And if they want to avoid that, they can avoid that, and they can go play in Columbus if they want, you know? Like, every player knows what comes with playing in Canadian markets, and this is no different. You can always say that it's going to be a deterrent for a certain segment of players to play in a Canadian market because it is more of a fishbowl than every single city they could play in the U.S.
Is getting Kane insurance for a trade package such as Joshua 15th overall and Mancini?
I wouldn't say no, because there is a bit of a, I wouldn't say logjam, but the Canucks have a lot of left-handed wingers now. And so does that make one like Dakota Joshua more expendable? It is certainly more possible today, but I'm not sure it's exactly something that is on the agenda for the Vancouver Canucks. So that's how I would answer that question.
Yeah, I would generally agree.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Let's move on to the next one.
Which shall be from Lorenzo. What's one move or non-move that the management team cannot afford to get wrong this offseason?
Ooh.
If they do trade the 15th overall pick, you can't get that wrong.
Yeah?
It seems pretty obvious.
Yeah,
right?
No, I don't disagree. No, to me, it's, I don't disagree, but what are the, even if you make the selection at 15th overall, what are the chances that pick hits?
Yeah.
And what is a 15th overall pick in terms of the future of your organization? It means something, but I'm not sure it's going to determine whether they fail or don't long term. To me, it would be if you're trading your, one of your top prospects.
Yeah. So if you're trading Villander for
or DPD.
Or DPD.
That's what you can't get wrong.
Yeah. They seem pretty against trading either of those two players.
But that's what I would say. And the other one would probably be the Demko contract.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Because the Demko contract,
it has to be digestible and also
the only way I see the Demko contract
point.
The only way I see the Demko contract not really working is if the injury woes continue.
True, but I think
it's too much talent.
But let's say if you sign him to a 4-year deal,
yeah.
At high, you know, so the number has to kind of be in that a range where you can survive 3 years, because if it, let's say the injuries happen and he's never going to be healthy, now you got to deal with that cap hit for 3 extra years beyond next year.
Mm-hmm.
So the term on that, I don't think you can get wrong.
Yeah. Next.
It's funny you guys just answered the question we were about to read, which is what is the ideal length of a contract for Thatcher Demko?
For the Canucks, 3. For Demko, like, as long as possible, obviously.
Yeah.
But 3 for the Canucks.
Yeah.
Like, really 2, if you're being honest, but that's just not realistic.
I think it's more ideal length. Anything ideal would be shorter for the Canucks, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think probably the happy middle is, they probably end up landing on 4 if they get an extension done. Probably around $8 million per. Giddy up. What's next?
This one from Josh. Do you think the big acquisition that Rutherford alluded to earlier will be more underwhelming than we recently thought?
Are we sure Josh asked that question or Sat?
Yeah. It says Josh and not Josh Elliott Wolf.
No, I mean, and that's kind of what I was...
Sat's been alluding to this for a while now.
Yeah, I just look at... Mm-hmm. If you can't get Rossi for the 15th overall pick...
Yeah.
And whatever else you're offering, not including Villander or DPD, it's pretty hard to get anybody better. We saw Paterka.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this before, and I think sometimes people confuse us talking about the path forward, what they're going to do, and also what's the best thing you can do given your situation versus, like, this is going to work and this is going to be a great thing. It's one thing to follow the path. It's another to make it through to the other end. And we don't know how that's going to look by the end of it. But I think... We should expect, like, the Kane one was a risk, and we expected them to take a risk.
Mm-hmm.
It was just not the type of risk that excited people.
No.
And I would imagine the next trade they make is going to be somewhat of a risk, but also it might not be as exciting, but it might be a good meat and potatoes move.
Mm-hmm.
And that's annoying and frustrating, but it's in the vision of, can you make this team hard to play against and be a playoff team and give yourself a chance? And that's not exciting or fun, but that's kind of what I see them going towards here, you know? And is that going to be enough for... We'll find out, but I can see it. And honestly, like, if they can get a guy like Zacha, I wouldn't hate it. I know people don't like Zacha.
I was just about to say, Pavel Zacha.
He's actually
right?
good.
Come on down.
He's tall. He's tall, right? He's really tall. He's got size.
Oh, what a shocker.
Wow. What a shocker.
Wow.
I have to say. But no, but he's legitimately.
He's a six in front of his height.
He's legitimately good defensively. Legitimately. Can play wing, can play center. And if he has versatility. It's not sexy, but he's going to make you a harder and better team to play against.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of. And I don't even think they can get Zacha, honestly.
Yeah.
I think the price might be too high on a guy like Zacha.
That's interesting. I mean, Boston is center needy as well, so
yeah,
I could see that. But
yeah, like Renfrew Marco says, double down and sign two tough forwards. I think that might be, honestly, the best way forward might be to have a forward group that's going to punch you in the face. They might not score a lot of goals, but they can punch you in the face.
You still need to outscore the opponents. I don't know if you know this, but the team that wins scores more goals than the other team.
I understand, but I know you guys hate this, but the team that plays low-scoring defensive hockey has a better chance of winning than a bad team trying to outscore its problems. I'm sorry, but that's just
the
reality
of
hockey.
But it's also unrealistic to think you're going to go into every game like, we need to win 2-1. Like, you can't.
I don't disagree, but... Again, you have to pick a path. You have to pick who you want to be. What are you going to be as a team?
Yeah.
You can't be in the middle.
No.
And that's why the whole Rossi thing, if you want to be a tough and hard team to play against, you trade for Rossi. It's like, what are you?
You're more skilled.
Kind of. It's just picking what you want. What do you want to be?
You can have the all Smurf line. Hoglander, Rossi, Garland, all signed long term.
Give me good
and
players.
They'll all wear blue.
I want players that are good. I'm not talking about guys who can't play.
Yeah.
We're obviously talking about players that are good, you know?
But
I'm just saying.
You need some tall players as well.
No, guys can fight through contact. Honestly, I just need guys that can play through contact. And that's why I don't hate Garland. He annoys me sometimes with how he plays, but he plays through contact.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
With the talk of how the Canucks' 2025 first-round pick may not have that much value, how valuable is their 2026 first-round pick right now?
It's definitely more valuable. If it's unprotected, it's extremely valuable because the Canucks are a high variance team, I would say. Well, maybe high variance is unlikely. Like, I don't know if the Canucks is currently constructed are a bottom five team in the National Hockey League, unless you factor in a bunch of injuries to their star players. I mean, there is still a good amount of talent on this team, as we talked about.
Yeah.
Could have one of the better goalie tandems, could have a really good defense, one of the better ones in the league. So they're not really a bottom five basement team. But the thing about who are the bottom five teams in the league, it's like, okay, yeah, San Jose, Chicago, Pittsburgh. Pretty confident in those bottom three. But outside of Pittsburgh, Chicago and San Jose are trying to get better. Anaheim's going to be better. Utah already got better. You know, like, we're talking about a very few amount of teams that are going to be toiling around in the basement for the next number of years. So that's where variance could come in here. Your place in the standings may depend on injuries. And I just think for a team like the Canucks, the 2026 pick is extremely valuable, especially if it is unprotected. And that's why I don't think they would, for a second, think about trading that without protecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has not significantly less value, but it certainly has less value than than it would unprotected.
I think if the Canucks were willing to trade their unprotected first-round pick next year, it would have a lot of value.
Yeah.
Because I could see teams shorting the Canucks.
Because 100%. And while it seems like there's a lot of teams willing to trade their 2025 picks right now,
mm-hmm.
not really too many teams that are willing to trade their 2026 first round.
Yeah.
So that might be, could give you an edge in some trade conversations if they are going on ahead of tomorrow.
And sticking with that 2026 first from KD, as valuable as it is, can you see the Canucks making a desperation move if things aren't going well, or simply moving the pick to acquire a playoff rental? Or a deadline type question, but
yeah,
the Canucks would move the pick as a rental, but they would have to be in a really good position. You know, like, think about it logically. Sure, when they traded last year's pick, they were first in the Pacific Division. They felt like they had a chance to win the Western Conference. You may think that that's crazy, but, like, think about when they traded for Elias Lindholm. They had one of the better offenses in the league. You know, they had Hughes, Miller, and Pettersson all clicking. All, like, Pettersson and Miller were both projected for 100 points.
They might have been at or right near first overall in the league.
Yeah, they were when they traded for Elias Lindholm. They had Demko, who was going really well. They had everything going well for that team. Casey DeSmith was pretty good as a backup. Hughes was going to win the Norris. Besser was on pace for like a billion goals. He ended up scoring 40. So like when they traded that pick, everything was aligning for the Canucks to have a really good season. They end up winning the Pacific Division. But, you know, I don't think they give away that first round pick if they're kind of just looking at a wild card. You know,
I would hope not. I mean, the fear is, are they desperate?
It changes a lot when depending on where you are in January.
I think the fear is, are they desperate enough because of the stakes that they would do something reckless at the deadline just to make the playoffs? And time's going to tell.
Yeah. Canucks actually were tied with Boston for first overall in the league when they made that trade.
Yeah.
That was justifiable as far as you're trying to be a cup contender. The reason why it looks so bad is because everything fell apart.
Yeah.
And everything you built for that year and that experience was to further this group and this core to have a chance to do other things. And that core blew up.
Yes.
So what was it for? You don't take away the experience. It was worth it. But it had no long-term lasting true impact.
No.
It's not going to. Now, it had some experience individually, but the core blew up.
Yeah.
So now you're moving on to something else. And that's
and
the frustrating part.
And you're left with a draft already that is probably not going to bear any players.
Yeah, so you would have felt a bit, you would feel different if you had JT still, the team had success last year. You're like, okay, we gave up those assets, but look at the core. They had the experience, and now they're moving on to bigger and better things. Now it's like you're starting over again.
Yeah.
And that's what makes that not look as good in the past. It would be stupid for this team to spend big assets just to make the playoffs next year by the deadline. It just makes no sense for them. And as far as the first round pick goes, again, as far as the 15th overall, I love for them to have it and take it. And we'll see if they ultimately do that or not.
Next.
Ed Helinski asking, are the Canucks and Sabres going to do an off-season deal after all the rumors of them being connected this year?
I would say smart money is on a no. I know Dreger is still on the Canucks as a potential destination for Bowen Byram. Again, don't really see it unless they move another defenseman out. So, I don't know. Maybe there's a smaller deal out there. It's unlikely. They were really in on Paterka, it seemed like, and it didn't come to fruition, obviously. So, I don't think the franchise cousins aren't going to connect on a trade anytime soon.
Yeah, Byram just makes it more difficult. I will say the Sabres have a lot of players that teams are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes beyond just those couple of players. And I'm not optimistic on the Canucks being able to pull off a big trade for a big player. But they're trying.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be, you know, from a lack of exploring every possible avenue here. And we'll see how far they go in the next 24. The Canucks have said so far, there's certain things we're not doing. Well, push is coming to shove here soon.
Yeah.
And how badly do you want to improve your team?
Do you have to get really uncomfortable in the next 24 hours? Next.
We'll tie the next two together from Basketball Phil and James. Phil says, the Canucks haven't drafted a goalie since 2022. Do you think they should add one to the prospect pool this season? And James asks, is Joshua Ravensbergen a realistic pick for the Canucks at 15? The team has a rich goaltending history, and drafting the top goaltender prospect, who's from North Vancouver, is an obvious connection.
It's an obvious connection. If they don't sign Demko, and not to say a 3 or 4 year deal for Demko should get in the way of you drafting a player who might take 4 or 5 years anyways, but I just don't see them spending that asset on a goaltender right now.
There's not a lot of teams that will spend a first-round pick. I know it has happened in recent years, like Askarov was a first-rounder.
Yeah.
Sebastian Kosa was a first-rounder. So like, goalies have gone in the first round in recent memory. To me, it's not my favorite strategy. You know, if I could see it more in the second round, but yeah, he may not be there anymore.
Well,
this is the thing. It's 15 feels too high for a goalie, for me.
There is a scenario I could see play out. Alvin mentioned that he has had discussions about moving down.
Mm.
Do the Canucks move down to later in the first round, pick up a high second round pick?
Right.
Something along those lines, and then you get a first round pick, and then you're picking high in the second. I could see them then taking him.
Yeah.
I do think the Canucks are drafting a goalie this year.
Yeah.
I would be shocked, Reach, if the Canucks don't draft a goalie this year. The most likely range is after the second round, I believe. And Ravensburger, to your point, is probably going to be gone at that point.
Yeah.
But that's a scenario I see the Canucks taking him. Not at 15, but if they trade down, potentially.
The Canucks goaltending depth chart isn't in a bad place right now. Like, I know there's been a lot of speculation around it, but let's say they do re-sign Demko, as is their preference right now. Maybe you make a decision on Shelovs if you can trade him, but they do still like Ty Young very much. They do like Koskinen-Vuau. They have Jiří Patera still. They have Nikita Tolopilo as well. So as far as like prospects are concerned, they do still have, and they have a lot of faith in Ty Young building up into something, and they still like Tolopilo, who's into his mid-20s. So there is depth there, but you always kind of got to keep that churning with goalies. So drafting one does make a ton of sense, even if they are still short up in the near term with their goaltending depth chart.
Would you trade Filip Hronek for a top 6C if a deal like that was available? And could Hronek fetch you that kind of reward, or would you have to add the 15th pick?
Depends on the player, doesn't it?
It does depend on the player. Like, you know, let's say, because Rossi's been the one that's been most linked to the Canucks. Like, I feel if you were to say Hronek for Rossi, I feel like Minnesota would have to add to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, every trade has a different context. Hronek, I feel like Canucks Nation, I've said this before, I feel like Canucks Nation and some of our listeners kind of devalue Hronek a little bit. Like, he lives in Quinn Hughes' shadow, and we kind of forget just how good he is. Like, this is a 40-point defenseman on the right side, signed at a good number going into this new cap era.
How many right-hand defensemen in the league are better? Maybe 15, 14, if you really want to stretch it.
Yeah,
he's a top 15, 20 right-hander, easy. And,
yes,
and maybe I'm even, you know, underplaying him a bit.
So, to me, like, you'd have to be getting a pretty good centerman for Filip Hronek.
Yeah, but I think you could get a centerman for him.
You could.
If you're willing to trade him. Buffalo is interesting because, in theory, given what they got, you would think that would consider something along those lines. But would they want to take on a contract like that, considering how much the money thing? Like, you know, like we talked about before, not that the Kessel Ring don't is all money related, but if you compare that versus taking on a contract that's, what, going to be 7 years, 8 years, that starts at over $7 million per year versus a couple cheap players?
Yeah. The Paterka contract going to be a little bit more expensive than Kesselring and Josh Doan this year. So Buffalo is looking like a team that's erring on the cheaper side of things right now.
This one's, I think, a little young. From Mike the Urologist, has there ever been a more polarizing decision made by a single management group in this team's history? The Boudreau-Tocchet situation, how that played out, the Bohorvat trade, Pedersen signing, Miller trade, now the acquisition of Kane. It felt like a roller coaster built for nausea rather than fun.
Isn't that how they're all built?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of. I mean, when we had Mike Keenan here, it was similar. I mean, Linden.
That was worse.
Stuff,
that was way worse.
Yeah.
I mean, the Boudreau thing, like, they didn't. I get where it stemmed from, because they weren't ultimately the ones that hired Boudreau.
No, but then it speaks to the whole everything, the way the process was and all that to get to that point. And the other part was just not letting him go sooner.
Yeah.
Don't let it become what it became.
And the Pedersen signing, it's like, viewed terribly when they initially signed the contract.
When they initially signed it, the vast majority of Canucks fans were elated.
Yes.
Elated.
We got him locked up.
Yeah. It's now that people feel a lot differently about it. Do you have any more?
I got a bunch more. Yeah. I got some.
Let me do one from Marty the Red and others.
Well, we don't really have time anyways.
Quickly.
One more with Marty the Red.
Marty the Red mentioned Nick Ehlers. Is he a possibility? He's going to July 1st. Probably not.
Mm. Everything I've heard for months is Ehlers is looking at moving south of the border.
Yeah.
So
we'll see.
That's kind of the way NHL players think. Mitch Marner going south of the border. Brock Besser probably going south of the border. Nick Ehlers probably going south of the border. Now, Brock's different. I think he would stay in Van if the contract was right, but obviously hasn't been the case. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah coming up on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. Landon Ferraro will join us next on Canuck Central.